Thank you to Rula and Quince for sponsoring this episode.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening.
Amber Rogers is a business professional and creative from Texas. As early as she can remember, her life was filled with chaos. By the time she was 14, she was a multi-crime survivor. And by 19, she would serve as a witness in her best friend's murder trial. After the criminal justice process ended, Amber moved forward by cultivating a successful career and loving family. Until her past trauma instigated a cascading effect in her mental health and relationships. Although Amber has shared portions of her story at large, it took her decades and a life-altering mental health journey to realize the deep impact her teen years had had on her. The Broken Cycle Media team is deeply appreciative of Amber's transparency, rawness, and advocacy. These episodes are dedicated in loving memory of Katrina Marie LoCascio.
My ex-husband used to comment that we had the perfect family. When I got pregnant with my first son, I was so much older than my youngest sibling, which was 11 years younger. My kids were the only grandkids in the family for 10 years. And boy, were they spoiled. There was a lot of bliss. Our divorce really shook that up. I think there's defining moments that can break a marriage. I remember one specifically. I loved extravagant parties. And so for his 40th birthday party, I went all out. There were hundreds of people there and I had wine bottle labels made with his name on it. We lived on the water and it was just a good time. I got up and said, oh, I love him and blah, blah, blah. The one comment he made back was, doesn't my wife have nice tits? And I was pissed. That was a real dent in our marriage. I ended up going back into real estate because I was building his company. And that's when I had an emotional affair. And once I was gone emotionally, I was gone. I went to him. I said, we have a serious problem in our marriage. He said, what? I said, I have feelings for somebody. I said, we need to go to counseling. He said, when? I said, tomorrow. Unfortunately, you cannot sit in 2 years of counseling with somebody who's not being forthcoming and fix anything. Once I was emotionally disengaged from the marriage, nothing worked. I prayed about it, sat in church. I tried to get my feelings back. When the emotional affair ended, actually, he ended it. It was super hard on me. Very, very hard. I became very obsessive over him. It threw me into just a real weird space. And I so craved that emotional attention again. I just wasn't at peace at all. And that's when I made the decision that I was, in fact, going to divorce him and told the counselor. The counselor said she had counseled a lot of people and that she did indeed think we needed a divorce. I had made a decision that I was going to leave my ex-husband. I was going to Austin to be with my best friend. My divorce wasn't final, but I'd already made the decision. I already had another house picked out. I ended up falling for somebody. I went to Austin and I met a guy named Jason. And Jason and I were very in love. That's the first time I felt, I guess what people would describe as mania was with him, actually. I guess I'd been so emotionally suppressed in the marriage that I just was in bliss with him. But that quickly turned and I ended up getting back with my ex-husband. And sometimes that really works in families. I've seen it work beautifully, that just a separation, they come back and they're happier. But unfortunately, in our situation, I just could never emotionally connect with him again during the process of the divorce. So much was changing. I was a face of the community, so it was kind of public. That was hard. People started calling me, asking me, what attorney did you use? What financial planner? How did you get the right connections to movers, electricity, you name it. Therapist was another big one, obviously. So one night I just started praying about it, and I knew there were so many people in my shoes. I knew I needed to start a company to help people get vetted professionals to help them get through divorce so that they and their family were not taken advantage of. And that's when I decided to form the Divorce Care Support Company. At that time, I called Divas, which was Divorcing Independent Very Able Survivors. One of my proudest things about the company is that we were actually able to save some marriages. Some people need divorce, but not everybody needed that. And so it was always great to see when we could keep a family together as well.
In 2009, Amber launched a support-focused organization to help individuals navigate the emotional and practical challenges of divorce. Inspired by her own personal experience, she wanted to create a safe and empowering community where people could find encouragement, resources, and meaningful connections during the difficult transition of divorce. Members all over the country were brought together through support meetings, networking, and educational guidance. Over the years, it grew into a well-known support network that helped thousands of survivors and was amplified by several major media platforms.
Because we had such a variety of events, naturally, we were getting a lot of media attention. And so while this was exciting and fun, it was also a lot of pressure. And I got very concerned about my children being in the spotlight. I knew I was going to be in the media a lot. I knew I needed to protect the kids. The kids didn't ask for their mom to be some divorce advocate in USA Today. So I had a lot of pressure and there were a lot of thoughts and they were very mixed and they were coming very fast. I'd built a real estate business. I'd built a medical equipment business, but this business, everybody was coming at me in so many ways. You're trying to build and you're only making $3,000 a month. You might be driving a Mercedes, but you have to keep up a certain image. So the image wasn't aligned with what was going on. That's when I got offered the first movie deal. They wanted $200,000 to write the screenplay. They wanted me to bring in my investors and they were going to give me 10%. So I'm like, what? I definitely was acting erratic due to maybe the pressure. I really had a nervous breakdown at that point. That's when they started having me committed, in which I needed trauma counseling. I did not need to be thrown into a cop car and taken to a state institution, at which point it made it tremendously worse. In fact, I was basically almost assaulted sexually by another woman. The mental health system has violated me in ways that not only should a woman not be violated, but a human being. They've violated my right to religion. They forced drugs into my body that shouldn't have been in my body. I slept with my kids' pictures under my bed every single night. That was the first time I was committed, 17 years ago. Looking back, how dare you not have evaluated the trauma? How dare you have taken me to a state hospital for 3 weeks where you really do go crazy? When I left, they told me I shouldn't have ever been there, but it took 3 weeks of my life. By this time, I hadn't worked in 3 months. So I was behind on my car, behind on everything. There needs to be some type of benefit if you are caught in that situation that you can immediately get. I applied for disability, but it takes 6 to 9 months. I was literally in a crisis situation. There's some bitterness towards the state of Texas because I was actually deemed a crisis victim within the system. And instead of having a plan for me, they actually rearrested me. So how does a state come in and deem you a crisis victim and then re-arrest you? They put me back in a hospital, then they cleared me. What they had directed me to do was to go to a woman's shelter, which I did. Because I hadn't been physically assaulted, they couldn't help me. And I think that needs to change too, because emotional abuse, I can tell you this, for me has been more devastating than any of it.
And I argue you have been physically abused. It's just when you were a 14-year-old girl, and there is a cascading effect of trauma.
And that's why it's so important that we're having this conversation and that people are listening to us. If you don't stop the cycle, it continues. And unfortunately, I made mistakes, and somewhat the cycle has repeated, and I hate that.
Thank you again to Rula for sponsoring this episode. As someone who is a full proponent of therapy through all of life's most difficult challenges and sometimes even the easier transitions, I find the most consistent hurdle in finding a good therapist is just that, the search. But affordable and accessible mental health care shouldn't be out of reach, and too often it is. That's where most online therapy platforms fall short. Many don't work with insurance at all, which means you're stuck paying the full cost out of pocket or paying an expensive monthly subscription. Rula does things differently. They partner with over 100 insurance plans, making the average copay just $15 per session. That's real therapy from licensed professionals at a price that actually makes sense. And Rula isn't just affordable. The experience is tailored around you. Other online therapy platforms might match you with the first available provider, whether or not they're the right fit. Rula considers your goals, preferences, and background to provide you a curated list of licensed in-network therapists who are actually aligned with what you need. And they partner with a network of over 15,000 therapists and psychiatrists nationwide, enabling you to find your personalized solution and the right therapist for you based on your needs, preferences, and state requirements. No wait lists, no frustrating back and forth. Rula makes it easy to find a mental health provider who is accepting new patients, and appointments are available as soon as tomorrow. Plus, Rula sticks with you throughout your journey, checking to make sure your care is helping you move forward. Thousands of people are already using Rula to get affordable, high-quality therapy that's actually covered by insurance. Visit rula.com/WCN to get started. That's rula.com/WCN. You deserve mental health care that works with you, not against your budget.
Once the state of Texas got my kids and gave control to my parents, I didn't ever have full control of my life again. I was acting erratic. Somebody would just direct somebody to take me back to a hospital. So the initial stay in the facility was 3 weeks. Those thereafter, they depended. Sometimes I would get released immediately. And then there's definitely been times that a doctor, he'll just keep me in there, forcing me medicine. And there's no checks and balances here. There are good guys. They're out there risking their lives, but some of them abuse their power. And shame on them, because it causes real damage. It's that way in the mental health system too. The doctors sometimes abuse their power. I do want to see a law change. Number one, if you are a witness in a capital murder trial, that you get ongoing mental health care and trauma care through the state. I think it should be mandatory, even jurors. Number two, if you're ever deemed a crisis victim in a state, they need to have a plan for you. All the while, I'm trying to run a divorce company to help people. I continued my company, and I'm proud I did that. So I was building my business, and I was living on a shoestring budget. Unfortunately, one investor had to pull out. He didn't have a choice. At that juncture, I had been in so many hospitals. My parents kept saying I was an alcoholic, which I will say there have been times I've self-medicated, but I'm not an addict. My disease is mental illness, and you cannot treat them the same. They're different. I was watching TV and I saw Dr. Phil, and I was with my parents, and I thought, oh my God, this is the answer. I emailed Dr. Phil. I was seeking answers because I knew I was having mental health issues. So after I emailed Dr. Phil, to my surprise, I was emailed almost instantly back. The producers talked to me every day. I ended up going 9 years ago, right around my 40th birthday. And Dr. Phil said something so important. He said, "This doesn't work if everybody's not being authentic." And unfortunately, not everybody on that stage was being authentic. That really hurt the people I grew up with. I had one friend in Texas that saw it, that grew up with me, and the friend that I moved in with when I was 15, she can hardly talk about it to this day. She called the other friend and said, "I'm sick." She said, "Don't watch this alone." I had another friend that called me and wasn't a very emotional guy, and he called me crying. But I want to say this. From that, I did get some good treatment. I ended up in Palm Beach. They did the trauma treatment very well, but they only offered that once a week. And I ate that up. I was like, this makes sense. I had the best counselor there. But when they released me, they forced me to go into sober living. And I was super uncomfortable there because somebody had left meth. And I'm scared of situations like that because my friend was murdered and they think drugs were involved. I didn't feel safe, so I left. It caused a real rift.
Amidst Amber's mental health journey and before she began truly contemplating the deep impact of her childhood trauma, Amber started thinking about Katrina's murderer's potential parole. It had been over 25 years since Robert Gurley III's sentencing, and she wondered if he was nearing a parole hearing date. When she looked him up, instead of parole information, she found his inmate dating profile.
Around a certain time, I started getting worried about the parole hearings, and I went online and I found his dating profile, and it outraged me. It's like, oh, I found God. I like to take walks. I don't care what you're doing. You don't deserve to be here, was my thought. And so I called the DA. I said, when's the parole coming? He said, Amber, usually they don't make it to that. Just try to calm down. And best Valentine's gift I ever got was in 2021 when the DA's office called me and told me he had perished in prison. That was my piece because I had to see him on the dating sites and I had to worry about parole hearings. I'm so thankful I never had to go through that. I was very fearful of that. 27 years goes by quickly when you're on the victim side of it. In ways, I've lost 30 years of my life. I can't all the way say that. Of course, I have beautiful children, but I've certainly lost 17 years and I've been held back for 17 years. Ultimately, the company I created ended up saving my life. So I'm now the number one story of how my company worked. It's because of all these people I helped. I'm not even healed enough right now at this state to date. But it is the first time I felt super empowered. But those patterns with men continued. And when I feel love, still to this day, if a guy gives me too much attention or makes me feel love too fast, I go into almost like a manic state. Wow, this is perfect. We're going to change the world. I'm chasing that love that I always wanted. And I didn't realize it until I was 49. And so that's kind of why I'm speaking out now. I'd been so conditioned to abuse, I didn't really know what was happening, and I have to work on that. I believe in finding your partner, so I hope I find that. I don't know what it looks like right now, but I'll never get married again. I'll do like a soul union, and I'm going to wear a pink dress, just going to be on a yacht. But to me, a marriage is a piece of paper now. I have very different boundaries than I had a year ago. And my new boundary is, number one, you abuse me, I'm talking about it. You're not going to keep me silent. Number two, if you're not going to admit the abuse and validate it, you don't need to be in my life. People say you have to forgive, you have to forgive. No, you don't. If somebody is not validating what they did and they are not changing their behavior, you simply move on. You're going to show me with your actions who you are. And by the way, I already have everybody I need in my life. So unless you add value and you are an authentic and good person, I don't have to have you. I know that sounds kind of harsh, but that's healthy. When I got healthy, it scared a lot of people. Some people are very much against me speaking the truth, and you're as sick as your secrets. And so it's time. I'm 49 and I know I can help a lot of people, and that's why I'm talking. If you are being abused, it is never going to serve you to be silent, because the abuse will continue. You have a voice. Use it. Do not hide for an abuser. Do not hide it ever. It only turns into more trauma. It will never serve you. God gave you a voice for a reason.
Thank you again to Quince for sponsoring this episode. Summer in Los Angeles can be brutal. That's why I am currently dreaming of lighter fabrics, better materials, pieces that just feel good the moment you put them on and look effortless, no matter the temperature. That's why I keep coming back to Quince. They focus on high-quality essentials. Think breathable linen, soft organic cotton, washable silk, but without the luxury markup. It's that rare balance where everything feels elevated, but still easy. Plus, everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. That's because Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has truly become a destination for elevated essentials across home, kitchen, bedding, and beyond, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. My personal favorite pieces that I've added to my closet are the linen pants, stretch cotton top, and silk spaghetti strap dress. All of them are perfect for nearly any occasion or temperature. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/WCN for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/WCN for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/WCN.
If you could say anything to Katrina's father, what would you say to him?
Oh, that's tough. I have never in 30 years talked to her parents since that trial, and her mom passed away. I felt so guilty, and I always was like, if they see me with my kids, they're going to be sad. My daughter's named after her, so he does know that. He knew bits and pieces, and he always wanted me to know that he didn't blame me, and he would get messages to me, but I'm sorry it took me this long to do something in her honor. I drove past his house all the time. I thought about stopping, but it just never felt right. So I just hope he knows that I did something for her, and I hope that that reaches him, and I think it will.
What do you wish every multi-crime survivor knew? And what do you wish every parent of a child survivor knew?
I want people to understand the link between trauma and mental health. And if the trauma is not resolved, you're going to have mental health issues. I just don't think people talk about it enough. I know for myself that it's definitely caused a lot of pain in my life because I didn't have that trauma resolved. So whatever you have to do, therapy is very important. Get to a victim's crisis group or have conversations like we're having. This is legitimately the first time I've really had a conversation with somebody who understands. This has been one of the most therapeutic things I've ever done in my life, talking to you. And really, I haven't ever talked to somebody else that's lost a loved one in the way we have. Although I've talked about my divorce and recovery, I've never really fully shared a lot of this. I haven't really been outspoken about the crimes committed against me. It's so rewarding that this just really had to come full circle for me, and it's time. What's been really awesome is that because I had the divorce care company, which ultimately saved my life, which is the strangest story ever, I've been able to do a lot of great things. I've had really good people in my life. My ex-mother-in-law is my mom. Aside from my children, she's the person I love most in this world and strive to be the most like. She, in fact, invested in my business after I was divorced. She'll say to this day, she divorced my son, but she's my daughter. She was the first mother figure in my life, aside from Katrina. And what you do is you create a family of choice and people that you love, and that doesn't have to be blood. I really hate I wasn't talking to my dad when he died. At the end of the day, as bad as some of the things he did, he was a good man, and I have a lot of his characteristics. He's very well-spoken and very successful in real estate, loved being an entrepreneur. And I honestly believe God placed the right people in my life at the right time. But if you don't believe in what I believe in, have some type of faith, because I don't think I could have done this journey without faith. If you don't have purpose, it's just very hard to make it through those dark days.
What words of encouragement or advice do you have for anyone else on their own mental health journey?
You have to find yourself a support system. Self-care means surrounding yourself with people who do what they say they're going to do, with people who care about you, and with people who don't sabotage you. Set good boundaries. Again, I don't care if you have to cut off a blood family member to be healthy. That is your choice, and don't let society tell you differently. Something that has been really bothersome that a lot of people have said to me is that, oh, you sharing your story is blame. Telling the truth is not blame, period. Something else I want to say, people say recovery is day to day. Sometimes it's second to second. You just have to do the next best thing and don't let anybody judge you. Going public again, I'm going to be judged. And I invite anybody who judges me to walk in my shoes and do it better. It's a tough journey. There's a lot of great places that I've recently found on Facebook, support groups for mental health. I find those very good for me personally. So I'm hoping in the future, with the documentary I do and the website, to have something where they can connect to somebody to talk to right away versus just getting on a 988 call or 211 and shuffled around. The system has a lot of problems. If you'd like to reach out, you can find me on Insta at Naughty Queen, N-A-U-T-I Queen, or you can email me at amber@murraymedia.com.
And that's M-U-R-R-A-Y?
Yes.
I just appreciate your candidness and your openness. And I think it's really important. Not enough people talk about the link between mental health and trauma.
So nice to talk to somebody who understands. I have a good friend and she said, you know, Amber, you're not a victim, you're a survivor, but you have to be a victim before you can be a survivor, right? That really landed on my heart.
When we think about mental illness, we often focus on what's happening in the present. Symptoms, diagnoses, medications, and treatment. But for many people, the story begins much earlier. Research over the last several decades has revealed a powerful connection between childhood trauma and mental health across a survivor's lifespan. Experiences such as abuse, neglect, exposure to violence, parental substance misuse, sexual abuse, or growing up in a household affected by mental illness can leave lasting imprints on developing minds and bodies. These experiences are often referred to as adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, approximately 61% of adults report experiencing at least one adverse childhood experience, and about 1 in 6 adults report experiencing 4 or more. Among today's youth, the impact is equally concerning. 3 out of 4 high school students report experiencing at least one adverse childhood experience, and 1 in 5 report experiencing 4 or more. Yet the effects of adverse childhood experiences can remain hidden for years, sometimes emerging as depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, substance use disorders, or other psychiatric conditions later in life. Scientists believe this connection is rooted in the way chronic stress affects a child's developing brain. During childhood, the brain is rapidly forming neural pathways that influence emotional regulation, decision-making, learning, and relationships. When a child is exposed to repeated or severe adversity, the body's stress response systems can become overactivated. Over time, this toxic stress may alter brain development and change how an individual responds to challenges throughout life. Relatedly, research consistently shows that adverse childhood experiences are strongly associated with mental illness later in life. Individuals who experience 4 or more ACEs are approximately 4 times more likely to develop depression than those with no ACEs. Studies have also found that people exposed to multiple forms of childhood adversity face significantly higher rates of anxiety disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder, substance use disorders, and other psychiatric conditions, demonstrating a clear overlap between early trauma and adult mental health outcomes. Importantly, though, trauma does not guarantee mental illness. Protective relationships, supportive communities, access to mental health care, and opportunities for healing can all help buffer the effects of trauma. But the evidence consistently shows that the risk of mental health issues increases as adverse experiences accumulate. In fact, researchers have found that the more adverse experiences a person encounters during childhood, the greater their likelihood of developing psychiatric disorders. This growing body of research has transformed how many clinicians think about mental health. Rather than further stigmatizing mental health disorder or illness, trauma-informed care promotes the idea that in order to understand where someone is today, we have to look at the experiences that shaped them long before the symptoms appeared. That shift in perspective matters. Understanding the link between childhood trauma and mental illness does not mean that our past determines our future. Instead, it highlights the importance of early intervention, prevention, and compassionate care. The same science that shows how adversity can shape development also demonstrates that healing is possible. Human brains remain capable of change throughout life. Through therapy, supportive relationships, community connection, and evidence-based treatment, people can build new patterns, strengthen resilience, and recover from the effects of trauma.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
I'm so happy to drop back in here and share what we've been up to since you last heard from me. A Little Bit Culty's hit a big milestone. 6 years of podcasting, storytelling, and shining a light on cultic abuse.
I revisit the spot where he was killed. There was a sign there since the day it happened that would say, "Rest in peace, Jordan Ocean, date of birth, date of death." For the past year or more, there's no sign anymore, nothing. They should have a memorial and a sign, "Do not speed. Somebody lost their life."
I have been able to find some measure of healing for myself, some measure of peace, really in being able to bring voice to my ancestors in some way, to put their stories down in ink. But what I also love about the project, it has been this bridge between myself and other people, between my family and other families.
Thank you to Rula and Quince for sponsoring this episode. You deserve mental health care that works with you, not against your budget. Visit rula.com/WCN to get started. That's rula.com/WCN. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/WCN for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/WCN for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/WCN.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram @Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.